I grew up in South Africa, and it was during apartheid. I grew up in the 60s and the 70s, and something that we all knew growing up, or all the guys knew, all the white guys knew, I suppose, was that you were going to spend some time in the army. That was just a given. We had conscription. If you're lucky, it could be the Navy, it could be the Air Force, but it'd probably be the Army. I was ambivalent about it. On the one hand, it would be an adventure, but on the other hand, the pay sucked. I didn't like being told what to do. Who does? And then there were some other rather itchy businesses as well. The one was that we were belligerent, and we picked fights with everybody. That is, South Africa picked fights with everybody. And so we had all these armed conflicts on our northern borders. And a couple of my schoolmates had already been killed in conflict. And I didn't see the point in that. And then the last part was that the army was brought to you by the same people who brought you apartheid. And I didn't really have much sympathy for them either. But anyway, so I found myself on a troop train heading towards the interior to this infantry base. And this was the adventure that I never asked for. And so we arrived at night. It was like a two-day train ride. It was a steam train. That was fun. And so we arrived at night, so there wasn't anything to see. But I realized, I noticed that it was really bitterly cold. And so, and then we were assigned tents, no barracks. And I was hoping this was a temporary assignment. But anyway, and the next morning, I woke up to the bleakest sunrise I'd seen in my entire life. The tents were brown. The ground was brown. Whatever passed for vegetation was brown. The uniforms that we were issued were brown. And it was all the same shade. The vehicles that we rode in when we were lucky enough to ride in a vehicle was brown. And even our rifles were painted brown. And there was just no difference. And I was sort of devastated by this because, I mean, I thought, yeah, sure. I didn't mind the running around, you know, the threats, the shouting. I mean, that was all fine. But it was just the lack of visual stimulation that really, really worried me. And I wasn't quite sure that I was going to make 2 years of this. And so I had a plan. I looked around me, and I realized, and you're going to hear the word haberdashery twice in the night. Thanks. So I realized that the organizing principle of the army, of their hierarchy, was haberdashery. And it was all about braid, ribbon, and shiny stuff. And I needed that more than I needed anything else. And the guys with the colorful stuff got to set the rules, right? They got to tell everybody else what to do. But the main thing was that, and I didn't really care, and people thought they were brave. I didn't mind, I mean, I didn't care to be brave, and I didn't care to tell other people what to do. I just wanted a more colorful uniform. And so, but there was a huge problem with this. I mean, and the problem was that the army didn't give the stuff away. You had to earn it, and you had to earn it by being a good soldier. And that was something that I didn't understand, because I'd never handled a gun in my life before. I wasn't a jock or a farm boy. And they seemed to do well. And I didn't know my right from my left. And I still have trouble with that. And that's a real disadvantage. But I was desperate. And I really needed this badly. And so I applied myself. And with a lot of luck and some really good timing, I made it to second lieutenant within about 10 months. So I was a 19-year-old second lieutenant. And that felt really good. Not for most reasons, but just because I'd found like a design solution to a problem of powerlessness, and I felt on top of the world for that. And so there were a number of other things about the army that I thought were really inspiring, and one was boredom. They had boredom down to a T because they're reactive. I mean, what, you wait around for somebody else to do something, and then you do something back. So there's a lot of, you know, sort of, well, what's happening? I don't know what's happening. And so there's a lot of, like, if you've had, like, sentry duty, you know, standing around all night trying to stay awake, or we had this great thing called Stand 2 on the Angolan border where you sat in your trench at daybreak and at sunset and you just looked over the sights of your rifle for an hour. Can you imagine the amount of daydreaming that you can do with 2 hours of forced inactivity a day? I mean, this is a gift because boredom is, in fact, it's the battery, it's the generator for creativity. So I had to thank them for that. And then the other thing was absurdity. So if you think about it, you have people who have sort of absolute authority over a situation. And they have some pretty silly ideas. And these silly ideas are compounded by previous silly ideas that they've had, or other silly ideas by other silly people who also have absolute control. And so this really breeds a lot of kind of parody and satire, and it makes you good at it, right? It makes you snarky. And so I had all of that. And if you think about it, I mean, think about in literature books like Catch-22 or The Good Soldier Schweik, you get an idea of the power of absurdity. So I had them to thank for that as well. So after 2 years, I was able to leave the army, at least for most of the time. They would still call me in to do things. And I went to art school. And so you would think I had this great experience, but I couldn't use it in art school because it wasn't remarkable. It was universal. At least like half the guys in art school had the same experience. So, you know, what's that? And so I didn't really access that much, and I made it through art school. And then the army got a hold of me again, and I spent 2 months doing riot control in the townships of Cape Town. And that really struck me. I mean, that shook me really badly. And so about 2 weeks after that, I got a plane ticket, and I came to the United States. I took what was called the chicken run. And so, and I came here, and I made no art for several years. When I started making art again, the forms that I found and the images that came to me, these forms of sort of regulation, regimentation, of discipline, perhaps of punishment, of restriction, and I'm still busy working with that. So, you know, thanks. And so that's really the story, except that I do have some people I should thank personally. And the first one is Sergeant Slubber, who he was my drill instructor. Obviously, he was very, very, I don't know, he was frustrated with me. And he tried his hardest to get me kicked out of officer school and failed. So sorry about that, but that's the way it goes. The next one is Captain Ackerman, who was perhaps the lousiest and the most inconsequential company commander in military history, and his sidekick, Lieutenant Swanepoel, who took, who advanced simpering yesmanship to a higher level that had ever been done before. I have to thank Colonel Hubert, who was this, he was this pious group commander, who had identified me as an anarchist, an atheist, and a communist. He didn't realize I was just an artist. And he knew about these evils abstractly, but he'd never seen all three walk around on two legs. And I really frightened him. Sorry to scare you, buddy. And the last one is the great Major Fenter, who was the battalion commander. And he unknowingly paid for every beer that I drank in 4 years of reserve duty. It was great stealing from you. I'd do it again. So to all of those guys and to all the many more who tried to make a better soldier out of me and really failed, I have to thank you at least for making a better artist out of me. So there you go.